Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
Each week, we'll be discussing the stories we're working on and which you can read more about in the City Press. So you may remember, I think it was the end of last year and again in the beginning of 2020, we discussed knowing your net worth and how important it is to understand that net worth calculation, the difference between what you owe and what you own, or should we say what you own versus what you owe, because hopefully what you own is more than what you own.
Own is more.
So we had that discussion last year, and I'll put a link into this podcast just to remind people to go back, because it was such a brilliant conversation. I must say it was one of our highest listens. People clearly, Mapalo, want to know what their net worth is. But there's so many other, as you call them, personal financial ratios that we can use in applying to our finances. It's not just about what you own, what you own. There's also a lot of other things, especially around debt, liquidity, our savings rates. So I thought it'd be really great just to go through those and give people a little bit of an idea of other ratios that they can be using in their financial planning. So like, what is... Okay, so we know the net worth calculation, but what is a savings ratio?
So Maya, you know what? One thing I always say, and I say that numbers do not lie, okay? You can tell yourself that, oh goodness, I'm doing well, look at my savings, I'm doing so great, or I'm, you know, my debt is low. But actually, what does it look like in numbers? And for me, this article really was just saying to people, you know what, you might be thinking that, you know what, I'm doing too badly or I'm doing well, but actually, what do the numbers say? And savings ratio really is the level of savings as a percentage to your total income. So it's how much how much you're putting away divided by your net income. And this shows you of your net income, how much is going to savings.
And when you look at that calculation, often people ask me this, what do you put in that savings? So for example, if you're paying extra into your mortgage, is that part of your savings ratio?
You know what, Maya, that's actually a very good question. No one has ever asked me that question. But for me, I would say it is, but in the long term, if you kind of project it into the next 5-10 years, depending on how much you're saving on your mortgage. Because remember, when you put more into your bond, when you put more into your house, it saves you money in the long term in terms of the interest rate. So for me, I definitely would. I would put it in there because if I were to pay my bond over 20 years, but because of how much I'm putting it towards my bond, it's saving me an extra 5 years or 3 years. For me, that is some sort of a saving.
I suppose it's really anything you're not spending is saving, really. So yeah. So how much of your net income are you spending and how much of your net income are you saving? It's actually not too difficult, I think. You only need to people always try and find like loopholes or quick, like how do we figure this out? It's that simple. If you're not spending it, you're saving it, okay? And by the way, debt repayments falls under spending. If you want to ask that, you are not saving money paying off your credit card. That goes into debt repayment. But yeah, so your savings is actually where you are building your wealth and building your assets. And the other good tip as well around saving, as you mentioned it, and it comes, there's also a this concept of pay more tomorrow. So this is one way, you know, we spoke about with the net worth calculation, how you each year you can actually see if your net worth is climbing or not. It becomes quite a nice barometer for you just on your financial health. But you can also check that savings net income as another barometer, shorter term barometer of your health. And one of the ways to do that is to commit to saving more next year. And you do that by either going to HR department and saying, when I get my salary increase next year, I want you to increase my contribution to my pension by 1%, you know, increase my salary. So say at the moment I'm contributing 10% of my salary, I want you to increase it to 11% of my salary next year. And you can do the same thing with any of your debit orders. So if you've got a debit order going away every month into a monthly investment, you sign that little thing that says 10% escalation every year, and then it just goes up. And we are so bad at admin as humans that's brilliant, because you will never remember to go and say, oh, no, change it. I don't want to pay that 10%. You'll just suddenly see it go off your account and it's happening and it's done. And we're very good we need to make our plans for tomorrow that happen automatically, because we're very disciplined about what we're going to do tomorrow. We're very bad about implementing it today. So just promise yourself and go and make the changes now. Oh, yeah, right. I'm going to tick the 10% escalation. I'm going to tell my HR to increase my, you know, contribution, a next salary increase, and do it all that. And then that is one way to make sure your savings ratio starts to climb.
Yeah, that is so brilliant, Maya. Actually, I watched, what is it, a TED Talk around that, but I never really got it. I was like, what are they talking about? So if anyone wants to understand how money works in a simple way, listen to Maya, okay? another way on your investments as well. I know they normally, when you take out some sort of a retirement annuity or something that you've said you contribute every month towards, they do have that option to say, okay, on the anniversary of this investment or policy, for those who have policies, unfortunately, they do have that that question to say, okay, do you want to escalate it by 5%, 10%, 15%? So that's exactly what Maya is talking about.
And then you just learn to, yeah, as your salary increases, although right now it's probably not time to talk about salary increases, but one day when it all comes back to normal and you actually have those things again. Okay, so that's the savings. But the big reason we don't have good savings to net income ratios, Mapalo, is because we have too much debt. So what is a debt to income ratio?
Your debt to income ratio, it really just reflects how much of your income is going towards servicing all your debts. So the credit card, personal loan, everything that takes money away from you. And I love the fact that, you know what, this one, it has like a percentage. Your debt to income ratio must be at least below 36%. If it is beyond that, then you're in trouble. And we know, Maya, that a whole lot of South Africans, a majority of South Africans, their debt to income ratio is going on to the 60s, even 70%.
Okay, and the other point that a lot of people don't understand is that 36% needs to include your mortgage repayment.
Yes, yeah, no, absolutely. So,
and your car repayment. So I want you to work out, if you're only going to have debt of 36%, what car repayment can you actually afford and what home loan can you actually afford, plus all those other loans that you have going off?
Yes.
Go do that number. It's going to scare you. And what I also find, Mapalo, is that a lot of people, they go off and they're still renting. And they go off and they buy that car.
Mm.
Okay, we love cars. Okay, we buy that car. We push our debt repayment ratio up to 35%, maybe 36%. So we're at the limit. And then we decide, I don't want to rent anymore. I want to buy a house.
Yeah.
But that car repayment is taking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's taking up a huge chunk of the amount of money that you should be allocating towards your mortgage. So it's really important that when you look at that number, don't look at it as a target. It's not a number to reach. It's a number that you have to consider, that even when you want to become a homeowner, that it needs to fit in that. And the other very interesting thing is, when I speak to debt counselors, they all tell me that 40% is the tipping point.
Oh.
Which is why they say keep below 36%.
Yes,
because 36%, there may be an emergency, there may be something that tips you over 36%. But if you are on 40% and you have any life event, that unexpected life event, you will land up being over, and you will go into not being unable to pay your debts.
Yeah.
So that 40% they see as literally the cliff face. Once people reach that point, they become extremely vulnerable.
Yeah. And Maya, for me, what I've seen, and I've actually just kind of thought about it in the past week, I did a coaching session on a young couple as well. Funny enough, I think because of the coronavirus, a lot of people as couples are waking up to the fact that, you know what, they need to talk about money and start managing their money better, right? And they, like, randomly after I had gone through their statements, they said, our cat needs insurance for this and that, and we're just going to put it on. I said, have you guys gone through your budget? You know, I love cats, I love animals, everything, but for me, it was just a reflection of how easy because of our lifestyle we end up, you know, adding all these expenses to our budgets without even really considering. That's just one example, but it was like small things like, oh no, I need a new phone. So the new phone wasn't really budgeted into that properly, so it's just going to go off the account. But actually, they were at their limit, and this ratio, they were at about 59 already, going for 60, if I think about it. But it's like, those small lifestyle decisions that we make, we're not making them consciously, that ends up making our debt to income ratio extremely, extremely high.
Yeah. And I must just say that having had a dog and we had pet insurance for it, was the best investment we ever made. I think pet insurance paid out during her lifetime substantially more than we ever contributed. So maybe there's room for cat insurance. But I also just want to add.
Yes, there's cat insurance, dog insurance, which we love, but.
You may need that insurance could save you a lot of money. But the one thing I wanted to add in just around this, you know, what do you add in your debt repayments? Because one of the things where people hide the truth of their debt situation is they put in the minimum repayment on their credit card. And I'm not sure that in the debt to income ratio, yes, from a bank's perspective, they would say it's your minimum repayment that they would look at. But what would you advise somebody? Because, you know, I'm very anti you only paying your minimum monthly installment on your credit card, because you'll be indebted for the next 20 years if you only do that. So how does one reflect in that credit card? I'm wondering.
Yeah. You know what, Maya? It actually makes me think of something I saw. Someone saying, you know, I'm not trying to aggressively pay off my debt, right? I'm just trying to manage it and build up my savings. I can understand in one point where you're trying to build up your emergency fund, because if you do not have that, then it's easy to fall back into debt. But I hear, I don't know, it's almost like, when it comes to personal finance and money, we try to convince ourselves that what I'm doing is the best thing. But when you do have debt, debt takes away money from you. And I always say, you know what, if you pay off your debt, yes, having had some sort of emergency fund, that actually saves you a lot of money. So for me, I guess this week has been quite a lot of things. But it really just brings us back to that debt to income ratio where, also, you know, it's like a personal thing. You know, I'm just going to pay the minimum, exactly to your point, but you never really get out of debt.
Yeah, I would say in that 36%, be more realistic and look at that credit card. In fact, you shouldn't even have credit card debt. Okay, that's but you were talking about the emergency, you know, and there is this discussion about, and I'm very with you, where we're kind of, the messaging we're getting out is saying, go and really make sure you have liquidity at the moment. You know, I've had this discussion. I had money that I normally invest offshore every year. I've kept it here, partly because the Rand just went to hell anyway, but also it's like, what's going to happen this year? Maybe I need the liquidity. Your money that you've saved for your car, you decided not to buy the car to keep.
Yes,
so you and I have both been quite concerned about our liquidity, and that is in the other ratio, is the liquidity ratio.
Yes.
And that's the ease at which you can turn your assets into cash if you need it. So that's your liquid yes. assets relative to your debt. So maybe just take us through that.
Yeah. So liquidity really is, can you withstand financial shocks? So your retrenchment, a major illness that really requires you to put a lot of money, or you can't work, for example. It's money that, should anything happen. I know we talk about very fancy words sometimes, liquidity, you know, Maya, which is, I think, sometimes puts people off, or people feel overwhelmed with that type of language. It's really just money to say, you know what, do I have enough money in my bank account to make sure that I can still maintain my lifestyle should any major shock happen to me, right? That's what it is. And with liquidity, it means that you shouldn't have so much debt, because when you have debt, it means you need to service this debt. Again, we always go back to debt as sort of like a trap. And liquidity really is saying how much your liquid assets by your debt versus your current debt you have.
So, and is there a ratio? Like, because you haven't mentioned a specific percentage. So what, like, is it kind of, because you know, it would be crazy to have enough liquidity to pay off all your debts, because then, you know, like your house and car immediately, because that kind of wouldn't make sense. You wouldn't have the debt in the first place.
Yeah.
So is it almost maybe a couple of months of payments, or like how do we determine
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. So as a rule of thumb, it's always 6 to a year's worth of your salary. So all your expenses should be paid. You should take care of your expenses for at least 6 to a year. But remember, Maya, my belief also, because personal finance can get overwhelming. Once you hear us here talking about, oh no, you should have at least 6 to 12 months of your salary in a bank account that is liquid, for a lot of people, it becomes very fearful. It's like, goodness, I'm not good enough, or she's, because I can't do that amount right now, I'm not there right now, then I'm going to ignore the advice, or how do I get there? It feels overwhelming. So for me, and I think you've even mentioned this, start with a specific amount in mind. Yes, you know that's what you should aim for, that's the goal, but start with an amount in mind. So if right now you can make sure that you have 17,000 in 7-day notice account, maybe as an example, or a different bank account where you're not going to be swiping it at any point, that's a start. But yes, the goal is 6 to 12 months.
So I actually always, I know the 6 to 12 months, that's what we say, but I actually work on 3 months for me, because I think that's at least 3 months is probably doable. Eventually you get to that 3 month one. And then my next strategy is looking actually at my mortgage. If I had to go beyond 3 months, to what extent could I use my mortgage? Cause I've got equity built up in my property, cause I've paid off my mortgage a bit quicker. So I think it's also about finding that balance, because it does, I mean, 6 months to a year, you know, you're going to say, what's the opportunity cost of not being invested, or maybe putting that money in my bond.
Yes.
So I think that, yes. So I like to keep some money that is really, really liquid, you know, in a sort of 7-day notice that I know it's there, and it just makes me sleep better at night, my fellow, seeing that money there. Like, oh, there it is. So it's so nice. It's so nice. I feel safe.
Taking my money.
I feel safe. But then I also know that, and this was very interesting during COVID. I mean, you and I have been incredibly fortunate to still be able to earn because of online, and we've still been able to convert all those speaking gigs into webinars. But,
yes, you know,
in the beginning, it was like that fear of what happens when all this work comes off. It doesn't happen. And, you know, one of the, I actually spoke to the banks and I said, what if somebody has paid an extra to their bond? Maybe they've got even like a couple of hundred thousand sitting extra in their mortgage. You know, what is the best strategy? And you could actually literally draw out and say, right, I'm drawing out 100,000. Now from my mortgage, it's in the extra, and I'm going to pay my bills. You know, if you've been retrenched or if you are in a position where, and then you actually pay your monthly installments, mortgage installments from that capital, rather than sort of juggling and taking debt payment holidays and all of that. It actually just works better to say, right, I need to cover myself for the next few months. I have the liquidity. I have built up the liquidity in my mortgage. I'm going to actually draw that liquidity now, and I'm going to live off a budget. And I you know, though, trying to get clever with interest and like how much, it's actually about discipline. It's about saying, right, this is my income for the next 3 months. This is how I'm going to live. I'm going to pay my bills, because actually that extra money I've been putting in my mortgage was part of my liquidity. So I think that's also been a very interesting, an interesting way of dealing with it going into these difficult times.
No, absolutely. And it actually makes me think of a question I got, Maya, on Instagram. Someone said, should I be using my house or bond to save in terms of like an emergency fund? So I think that really is answering the question. So I'm going to tell her, come and listen to this podcast, because my answer is
absolutely. And then we have the solvency ratio. Like, are you solvent? This is an interesting one. So this is your net worth versus your total debt.
Yes.
And that's a scary one for some people. That's a very scary one. We do Money Makeover. We got our finale coming up. And it was very interesting. It was actually Nonu who showed me this. She did 22-7. She used the 22-7 app during the Money Makeover. And you know that she shows you what you owe and what you own. Yes. It actually has that on the dashboard. And how she's been sending me snapshots to show how it's been changing. But that's a number.
It is. And I think, Maya, so especially if you're just starting out in life, a lot of the times you will have debt. So you would have financed your car through the bank, you would have financed your house through the bank, and you will probably not even be paying the capital amount, right? Because we know the first couple of years of owning a house and you have a bond is that you're really just paying interest in the first couple of years. So with a solvency ratio, it's really just saying, okay, your net worth, which we spoke about earlier, divided by your total debt. You know, how solvent are you? Do you really actually have money? Because, you know, even with the net worth calculation, a lot of the times we'll put your house, it's worth 5 million, but maybe perhaps at that point you've only paid like 20,000 or you've only paid 100,000 of that. So solvency ratio really tells you if you are building the assets and you actually have money, if you can call it that. You have the real assets. Do they belong to you, actually? Do they
exactly belong to what, you or not? What of your house do you actually yes, own?
Actually, there we go.
And this solvency ratio is actually, it works off. So if you take your net worth, you divide it by your total debt times by 100, it'll give you a number. And you said that number must be greater than one. So yes. If it's greater than one, you're solvent. If it's below one, you're insolvent. You're on the wrong side of the one, okay? You've got to be above one. And I think that also, to me, that and the net worth calculation are really good trackers just to say, and even set a goal saying, I'm going to grow it from below one to above one, but then above one to what? You know, like how am I going to progress that? And I like that just in your head, you're kind of on the right track when you're getting above one because now you actually own more than you owe.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you actually own some of that house in real life. Yeah,
in real life, on not just on balance sheet. And like we said earlier, if you're starting out in life, normally that will probably be below that number one. But again, as Maya is mentioning, do the calculations and put it as a benchmark for yourself.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Maplo. I think that has given us, I don't know, to me, this has really given some fantastic numbers that you guys can really start using to identify whether or not you are on the correct road to financial freedom and make sure you are on the upward trend. So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website, or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.